What's up? What's up? Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of If You Know, You Know. I am super excited to be here today. I just clicked it. So we're going to be live streaming again. I started doing it last year, like 2 weeks ago. And so this whole new streaming live thing is new for me, but I'm super excited because it gives us a completely new, you know, way to show and to connect and to everything. So very excited about that. So I want to give a little bit of background to and give a couple of seconds while everybody comes in to hear about this particular show. So a state of the market, if you will, and the perspective of why I'm even having this today. So it's the beginning of the year, 2024. If anybody goes back and listens to it, you know, later next year, then I want you to hear this. So here we are in January. ETF, supposedly, the Bitcoin ETF supposedly was going to be approved yesterday. SEC has been talking about it and ended up tweeting about it yesterday, saying that it was approved. And the market, you know, reacted very quickly and it went up and it rallied and then it dropped all the way back down and then it just kind of continued to chop there. But billions of dollars were lost in just a couple of minutes through that transaction. And it ended up being that the SECX account had been SIM swapped, which means that the SEC, the account holders, had to have their phone number tied into their account. And by doing so, they were susceptible to being hacked. And they were completely hacked. And it ended up being that the SEC had to come back and Gary Gensler had to come back and say, oh, hey, that wasn't us. And we never intended to go out. So now everybody's put in this position of like, okay, what do we do? Is it going to be approved? Is it not going to be approved? Holy shit. How did the market react? You know, Ethereum is going up, but Bitcoin is going down. How do we control this? And even more so, how do we remain secure, both from the perspective of as an account holder, as well as a participant in this ecosystem? So you have that particular set of things. The other thing that you have right now, January 2024, as we have had in the last couple of cycles of January, has been the airdrop season. To where if one platform has given out an airdrop, then we as a community, NFT enjoyers, crypto enjoyers start air farming for a lot of different airdrops. So all of that to say, I thought it was a very good opportunity to start off the year talking about how to be really secure, how to take advantage of the ecosystem opportunities that are out there. So, all right. Retweet, if you will, show the algorithm, you know, love, so that we can have more people in here. And with that, let me reintroduce the show. Now that I've explained that, I am your host, Belle. Each week, I've been doing this for a minute now. Each week, I'm joined by Web3 experts to bring you the latest trends, opportunities, and perspectives from the creators who are shaping the future of technology and art. Nothing we ever say is ever financial advice, and it's always really important to do your own research. If this is your first time joining us, the show is live on X every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also find us on all of your favorite streaming platforms. If You Know, You Know is powered by Tau BRC, and in the pin post in just a second, you'll be able to find instructions on how you can get today's Space Caps POAPs for our guest. Like I also mentioned, we're also streaming live on video. So if you want to check us out there, that would be fantastic. So I have two really special guests today. I know that Jen has already joined us. She's with us on both on live stream as well as spaces. And in a minute, hopefully we get Michael is already on here as well. Okay, cool. All right. So Jen, Jen, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself in just a second, but I want to give the introduction that if you are not following Jen, do yourself a favor and do so because Jen creates the best freaking videos on DeFi in a way that is easy to understand, in a way that is easy to follow, etc. So I wanted to, you know, invite her to the show to explain to us the concept of DeFi and NFTFi, which is a completely different thing. And then this show, my intention is for it to be very interactive. So we also have Michael with Wallet Guard. Michael is, you know, both of these are titans in their own worlds and in the security world. So I want it to be a very interactive show to where we talk and we engage and we learn. So Jen, welcome, welcome to If You Know, You Know. I'm so excited to have you on. Jen? I think you're muted. There you go.
There we go.
No problem.
I know. Hey, so I guess first off, thank you for having me on the show. And I'm really stoked that, you know, the Wallet Guard team is here too. I am obsessed with Wallet Guard. I use it myself. It's probably, you know, if you're transacting on Ethereum, you 100% need that extension to make sure you're not getting, you know, phishing, scammed, and then going to like drainer links and whatnot. So DeFi, the way I like to think about DeFi is basically it's a new financial system that is being built on top of smart contracts and blockchain technology, and it's open to anyone, and it isn't being gatekept by legacy institutions like banks and hedge funds, is kind of like the larger summary. And then NFTFi is a subsect of DeFi, because basically with decentralized finance, you're doing things like lending and borrowing, you're providing liquidity, you are staking. There's a ton of different yield opportunities that you can explore. And then when you look at NFTFi, that vertical specifically, it's basically DeFi, but with NFTs instead of fungible tokens. So there's that.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to explain that again, because the concept of it is so difficult. Before we dive into that, though, Michael, I'm having a problem inviting you up to speak. I'm trying to send it to you. So if you can, I think maybe you just need to drop down and then come back up so that we can get you on stage. You can join the conversation. Sorry about that. Jen, okay. So, you know, I've been participating now in the space since 2020. Yeah. Okay, cool. You're on now.
What's going on?
Awesome. How are you?
Good. I'm actually going to try to hop on to the live stream. But
okay, cool.
Yeah, just need a minute. I'll be right on there.
Okay. Go get yourself pretty. Get on screen.
Yep. Thank you.
Is it so? I actually can't hear him. Is that okay?
Oh,
like I'm in the spaces, but there's like a little bit of a lag.
Okay.
For me.
So I think he just went back onto listener. So there should be. How can I get a thumbs up from everyone else? Can you hear Michael? Were you able to hear him just a second ago? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So when he comes out on stream, Jen, you should be able to hear him.
Perfect.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay. So I want to go back to the concept of DeFi, because, you know, I've been doing this since 2021, like actually trying to engage in the DeFi opportunities that there are out there. And one of the things that I always, when I'm trying to explain it to someone, even I cannot, like it takes me a while to even explain it to someone, but I try to kick it off with explaining that it is permissionless, which is important. Mm-hmm. Because why?
Well, do you have a credit card?
Yeah.
So I also have a credit card, and I don't know if people realize this, but every time we use our credit cards or use our debit cards, we're actually asking the banks for permission to spend the money. Like literally the moment you tap it or you swipe it or you insert your chip, what happens is a signal's like sent to the bank being like, hey, Jen wants to spend $100. And then the bank goes, either I have the credit to do that or I have the balance. And they go, okay, that's fine. Like, go ahead, send it through. And, you know, on the day-to-day, I think it's like one of those things that it's like, it's not really a problem that we're having to ask the banks for permission. But then when you start to do things like you want to spend more than $10,000, right? It's like you literally, you'll try to do the transaction. Most of the time it'll decline. Sometimes the threshold for that is even less, depending on your bank. And then you have to call the banker and be like, hey, I'm trying to, you know, buy, like, I'm a little frazzled. I'm a little under the weather. So I might be a little slow on some of this, but like a perfect example was when I moved out of my parents' house. I packed up my shit, moved to my new apartment, and then realized like, oh, I don't have plates. I don't have sheets. Like I needed to go get all of this stuff. So I ran over to Target and I went to, you know, purchase some of the basic essentials. And I think the transaction was going to be around like $1,000. And I was transacting on my debit card and I tried to pay for all my stuff. And I had more than enough money in my bank account to pay for all of this stuff. And my transaction wouldn't go through. And I only had a debit card at the time. And so I actually had to put all of the stuff back, take a step aside, call my bank and be all like, hi, like, I'm really confused. Like I have, you know, at least $5,000 in my account. I'm looking at it on my phone right now, but my card is declining and I'm trying to buy some essentials. And I got put on hold and they're like, give us a second, let us check. And then they came back and they're like, okay, the reason why your card declined is because you have a daily spend limit on your debit card. We'll increase that a little bit for you for the next 24 hours. And then if you need to increase it again, you just give us a call. Like, this is weird. This is like money that
it's your money.
It's my money. And I'm having to like call the bank and ask permission to spend it. And so this idea that, you know, we work hard to have our own money and then the bank holds custody over and then you have to go to the bank to ask permission. It's weird, you know, and I think it's really weird that our society has been trained that this is normal, that this is the most secure and safe way to do it is to have like the big banks in charge and holding custody over this stuff. But then you can easily point back to things like the 08 housing crisis being like, these are the people that are in charge of our assets that ultimately at the end of the day are just concerned about their bottom line and their top executives. And so I think like the idea of permissionless finance is so novel. And I think it's strange that people don't understand how powerful it can be. So that's why we need something like DeFi. That's why we need to start being able to hold custody of our assets and to truly own our assets. Like we can't, and especially in a world that's moving so digital and we're starting to really see a digital economy emerge. And so it goes hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that you're spot on. I have a teenager and we've had conversations before of like, he plans to have a job and he thinks that that's his own money and that he can spend it the way that he wants. Right. And so we've had that conversation of, well, the bank doesn't allow you to, you know, deposit and immediately use it within an hour. There's a waiting period, right? There's a waiting period because they, whatever. And so there's so many rules and regulations that are imposed when it comes to our hard-earned money that we've deposited there, thinking that we'll be able to access it at any time. So I think.
And to your point, like there are many countries around the world where a lot of people can't even open up a bank account.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's one of those things where like the older I get, the more I'm like, wow, the system is fucked. Like the world in which we live is pretty messed up. Like I'm in the United States and it's like, okay, so I have to bust my butt off to make money, pay taxes on that money, pay taxes every time I spend that money. And then like have to ask for permission to spend that money and pay taxes. You know what I mean? It's just like one of those things that it's like, this is just so backwards and antiquated and it just doesn't make sense in the society that we live in today, in my opinion.
And we have to go back and say thank you. Can I have another?
Yeah, exactly. Or like thank you. Let me put some money in my bank account where I'm earning like 0.1% interest a year while you take that money and lend it out.
Exactly.
And, you know, charge people 30% APR on their credit cards or charge them an insane interest rate on their mortgages or their auto loans. It's freaking wild.
It really is. Michael, welcome to the live stream. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Great to see you. Great to see you, Jen. It's awesome to be in this topic and conversation. I already feel the energy coming from Jen about the topic. So yeah, let's fucking go.
We got the fuck the man type of energy today. What do you think about all of this, Michael?
Yeah, I think it is important for people to realize how holding your own assets and being able to verify things differently than what we've been taught our whole lives is something that is going to require a lot of education. And I think mass adoption is not going to happen quickly, but I think it's important to remember banks have multiple layers of security and they don't necessarily let us see what's happening because of course it's not like the blockchain. Not everything is on chain. There could be situations we don't even know about that haven't been reported. And you know, it's kind of like, when does it get to a point where we can teach users how to secure themselves? How do we make it so that you can have as much security and you do have a security mindset so you don't lose everything in a single click, so that you don't have to worry about, hey, is this something I should be doing or not doing? You know, there has to be not only the education, but the tools, the interfaces to make these experiences easy, which is why I'm happy mass adoption didn't happen in a short time frame. Imagine all of these different threats that we've seen and even compromises within the past month happened if there were 10x the amount of people here. That would be detrimental to the space and that would impact a lot of people's livelihoods. So I'm happy mass adoption didn't happen quickly, but I think that the focus and the topic of security needs to be at the forefront when you're onboarding anyone into the space. Otherwise, you're doing them a disservice.
Friction 100%. Of use. Yeah, really. Right on point. Friction of use and technological, you know, hurdles gets in the way a lot of people coming into crypto. But it also, like regular banking, I worked in risk management for about 20 years, right? And one of the concepts that we talked about a lot was reserves on like an insurance type of basis, right? Of when an insurance company has to set reserves to pay, you know, a certain claim or to pay a certain payout, et cetera. It's the same way that we now see in DeFi, in the lending capacity of it, to see what the liquidity is of it, right? But the concept of being able to understand that is, number one, super not transparent at all. It's because it's hard to understand. It's really hard to explain it. It's really hard to understand it. And it's also the lack of education, the lack of transparency around it, especially when it comes to things like, you know, when it comes to sexy, attractive things like magical internet money, right? Everybody wants that. But exactly how does that come out? How exactly does one tap into that, you know, free magical internet money, right?
I think for me, whenever I'm talking about or eventually get to talking about crypto or NFTs or any of the stuff that we already know about with people that aren't in the space yet, I'm not even mentioning, you know, NFTs or blockchain or anything. Okay. What I like to do is I like to bring something to them that they are already familiar with, because a lot of people get scared. It's fear of the unknown to talk about crypto or NFTs, which is why they hate it, because they don't understand it, right? So if you can bring examples that they're familiar with into the picture, then they will later on start to think a little further in, and then they will question what is happening, right? So I'll give you a quick example. This is something that I like to bring up all the time. So you're comfortable with the way that you currently transact. So if you want to go out to eat, you know, you have a debit card or a credit card that's made by Visa or MasterCard, you know, that's one company or institution. Then you have a, you know, a bank that's holding your money, which is another institution, like Chase or Bank of America, let's say. Then there is a credit card processor, which is another institution taking a piece of the transaction, just like the bank and the credit card company. Then there's a merchant service provider that sells the point of sale system to the business and also takes a piece of the transaction, which is another institution. Then you have the business's bank account, which might be a different bank than your bank. And that money takes 3 to 5 days at times to post transaction. So you're comfortable with the way that you've been dealing with currency the entire time. And the fact that you have 6 to 7 middlemen operating in between us, all taking a piece and also seeing what we're doing. So, you know, when you bring it up like that and they're like, okay, well, what else, you know, how else would you do it? Well, okay, let's talk about cryptocurrency, right? You walk into the same institution and you want to buy something. You are your own bank. The business is its own bank. The money goes within seconds, not days, from your account to their account. And everything is confirmed on a public ledger. So how could that be more confusing than going from, I don't have to explain the whole process, it's in this form, but so then, you know, then they start to open their eyes up a little bit. Then you bring other examples into it. Like, you know, do you care about your own information, your own data? Do you realize you don't own your own information? Mm. So even when you talk about like something that looks like not social networks or shopping or things we're doing on a daily basis, but let's talk about something that like the medical institutions, right? So you've been to doctors, dentists, hospitals, multiple different institutions in your life, and you've given your information to all these institutions, including your social, your name, your email, your allergies, everything about you, right? And you don't know how they hold that information. They could be holding it on physical media. They could be holding it on their own servers, their own computers. They could be compromised actively right now, or they could have been compromised in the past. Your data could have been leaked, stolen. There could have been a malicious employee that copied that data and sold it on the dark web, whatever the case is. There are many variables involved with your information. And if you were to say to that person, well, what if you owned your own data, right? So your information was a token in an encrypted container that you control. And when you walk into these institutions, you're giving them access to view that data while you're there. And they don't need to necessarily copy it over to their own systems. They don't need to create a data trail and data scatter and potential data compromise, and also have these multiple layers of bureaucracy in between you and your information, including data entry farms. So when you talk about these things, I haven't even gotten into NFTs and crypto yet, right? So then the person starts to think like, okay, holy shit, I don't really fucking own anything. They're, you know, what's the other option, right? Because if crypto didn't exist, we wouldn't have another option. So sorry for the rant. But yeah, those are my thoughts.
Jid, I saw you laugh a couple of times when Michael was explaining that. What do you think?
Well, it's just like the whole doctor thing too. It's like, why do we have to go fill out the same forms every time we go to a doctor's office or a different doctor's office? Like, you sit down, you get like that freaking 5-page packet that you have to go through. Like, Michael nailed it on the head. If there was a token that we held, that, you know, we could just like, I don't know, tap or whatever. And then it's like, okay, cool. We have all of Jen's medical records, but it's
we have all of Jen's medical records for a specific amount of time that she stated on her token.
For this visit. Yeah.
For this visit. You're not holding this data, right? So if you get compromised, Jen's medical information is not compromised. This should be the same style that eventually we look at the social networks that we use today. For example, you don't own your photos or videos that you upload to Facebook. You don't own your data on these social networks. Your data is actually on their servers. So if your data was actually information held in your own wallet, then these services start to become just interfaces, right? They're just a UI and a UX where you're connecting your data to in order to interface with other people. And you choose if you want to use Facebook or X or whatever you want to use. And that data is actually owned by you. And you have the ability to remove that data from that platform. So this is a totally different way of looking at it. But here's the thing. None of this would have been even possible to even have a discussion about 10 years ago, yeah. Right? The technology was not this far along. The internet was not this expanded when it comes to global access. So it is naturally, I think, that just simply the next logical step of how data and transactions should be handled, currency and asset management should be handled. And anything that goes against that is just friction up until it happens. And I think it will take decades for it to happen in multiple industries, but it is the next logical evolution of how these things will work. And anyone that disagrees with that, I just don't want to know that. I just don't want to, I don't like, that's cool. You can have your own opinion. I'm not against your opinion, but I definitely do not agree with that sentiment of, hey, no, we're going to keep it the way it is right now. Everything is fine. No, everything is not fine. You do not own anything. And the concept of actually managing and understanding how important your own data is not there. It is not taught.
Yeah.
And that goes again, full circle back to education. So
how does decentralization change that or improve anything? That's for either one of you.
Like, I was going to say, Belle, do you mind expanding on that question? Like, how does decentralization like improve the systems that we have today?
The current systems that we have today. Yeah. And the reason I say that is because every crypto advocate or every educational video that we see, you know, hits it home with, but this is decentralized. It brings back, you know, an opportunity for creators, for developments, for et cetera. So I'd love to hear from your perspective. What is decentralized, you know, finance, right? We want to talk about DeFi today. So how does decentralization as it relates to crypto change the game?
Yeah, I think this goes back to the whole idea of like truly owning your own assets. Like what like NFTs enables us to do is to like undisputably own items on the blockchain, where, you know, unless the entire internet goes down across the globe, you will always be able to point to like, I own this. And I think my approach when I'm talking to folks not in the space is like a little bit different than Michael's, because like lending and borrowing, like this is the reason why I'm so bullish on it, is because when I like tell people about some of these lending and borrowing examples, I just see their eyes like widen up and like a light bulb goes off in their head. But like, let's imagine you owned a piece of land somewhere in the United States, and maybe it's sectioned or permitted only for agriculture. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, a plot of land that's worth maybe $50,000 and you own it. The process of you taking that piece of land to go to a bank to try to get a loan out against that is insane. Most banks won't even, like, one, it would take you months to do. Most banks won't even provide you funds because it's not worth it to them, because the collateral is, they're like, oh, it's a piece of land that you can only do farming on and it's only worth 50 grand. But that's something that has value, right? If you were to tokenize it as an NFT, where one, it's now on a public ledger that you undisputably own that piece of land, you can then take that and go get a loan against it from someone across the globe that's willing to be like, hey, you know, I have some cash laying around and I want to make a little bit more money that I'm going to make on my savings account. And I'm happy to provide you this loan. And all of a sudden you have a permissionless peer-to-peer loan that happens within a matter of seconds with someone that, you know, is across the globe. And that's really, really powerful. And so I think like that's how I generally explain it to folks. Yeah. And then it's like with the caveat of like, it's time to put power back in the hands of the people. And that's what, to me, decentralization is all about. And like, once you kind of like see that our lives are being basically ran by these massive institutions, because like at the end of the day, like we depend on money. We depend on money to live, like to transact, to buy food, to basically do everything. And we should have power over that. And it's a little concerning to me that a lot of people don't realize how important that is. You know what I mean?
For sure.
I don't know if that was clear. Yeah, hopefully yeah. that was clear.
I think that makes a lot of sense. It makes a whole lot of sense to me. You touched on real estate. Real estate, you know, in addition to the medical field, are two of the industries that are often talked about. The legal system, you know, legal things also often talked about. Real life applications that are already starting, right? There's a lot of fractionalization right now going on real estate that you could even participate on right now. Michael, your thoughts on that? And then also, you know, as I am connecting to all of these different sites to do exactly that, which is lend money to farm for airdrops, WalletGuard is always at the top of my mind. So talk to us about how that ties in.
Definitely. So Really quickly to Jen's point, I think it's and also the concept of decentralization. You know, it can happen in multiple different areas of life and business, right? So mm-hmm. I think if let's take something like token proof, right? What token proof has done is it uses on-chain information in order to just verify that you are you when you go to an event. Yeah. And it also distributes those tickets in a way that's pretty much, you know, automated for the user and doesn't require, you know, multiple middlemen and credit card companies and Ticketmaster and this and that. You know, you're getting rid of multiple elements that basically add a lot of friction to what we are familiar with. So then you take it to a whole nother retrospect and you say, hey, somebody in a third world country that has, let's say, just an internet connection, right? They don't have the ability to open a bank account, but they have the ability to have internet. They can now, let's say they are a creator, right? They make art, they create music, they do digital work, graphic design, whatever the case is. Now they have the ability to be their own bank, create their work, put it on the internet, on the blockchain, and be able to be paid in a global currency that is accepted, you know, anywhere that chooses to accept it, right? So this is two drastically different areas of life, right? But it shows how far decentralization can impact the ability for not only people to, you know, rise up from their societal class, because now you're putting them on a level playing field, but also for businesses to be created that are actually more efficient and don't require all these different middle layers, which basically are a massive compromise to user data and security. Think about how many institutions, how many massive companies and third parties that we currently use have been compromised. Yeah. Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, you know, there's been data leaks. Like, these are institutions that we're supposed to trust. The SEC, with the situation that happened yesterday, Securities Commission, that doesn't even have basic security protocol on a social network. How could we even trust that anything that we're being told is true? It could potentially all be a smokescreen. And I think that it's slowly being unraveled. So that's my opinion on decentralization. And I think that it is going to take decades for it to roll out, like I said before. But when it comes down to security with WalletGuard, I think it's important to note that a lot of people just don't know that security exists in crypto, right? Because an antivirus is not going to do what WalletGuard does. The reason why WalletGuard was created was because you don't want that phone call the next day where the person is saying, I thought it was a free mint, all my NFTs are gone. Or I thought this was the website and the link was really this, what happened to my wallet? You know, we want to be able to provide a security layer for the user that's also tied to education, because that's half of WalletGuard, which is, hey, let's have the right tools so we can warn users if something is about to happen that they shouldn't be happening. And then we should also have the education layer to teach the users about what actually is going down, because it could be the middle of the night and you're not paying attention and you click on the wrong thing. That's when tooling comes into play. But when you're being potentially socially engineered or phished in the DMs, that's where education comes in first. You need to have both. And that's what we do with WalletGuard. So, you know, just so people know, WalletGuard is not a wallet. We're not an NFT. We're not a token. You don't have to connect your wallet to us. You don't have to sign anything, but we're able to detect wallet drainers and show you risk factors before you interact with any contracts, whether it's signatures, swaps, claims, or mints. And this is for your preferred wallet. You're using MetaMask, you're using Ledger, whatever the case you're using, WalletGuard is the security layer that is in between and doesn't require any interaction with your wallet in order to help save your assets. So that's to put it as straightforward as possible. And everything is on walletguard.app. So our browser extension, our MetaMask Snap, yes, you can turn us on directly in your MetaMask. So you see a lot more than just a gas fee. You know, you'll be able to see in plain English what's going in and out of your wallet. So you could confirm what you're about to do before you actually hit sign or confirm. Like, these are things that people just do blindly, and they unfortunately don't think about security until they lose everything, right? Like, I could be giving you all the security alpha and telling you how it only takes 1 second to install a lightweight open source tool that works with your wallet of choice in order to stop you from rugging yourself. But some people are going to wait until they get their wallet drained, and then they're going to say, oh yeah, I'm going to start using it now. That's just human nature. But as long as we keep talking about it and bringing it up, I think we could continue trying to get more people to be secured. And just wanted to give also just to wrap this up, a big shout out to our users. We started 2023 off with 5,000 users, and we just passed 70,000 users with over 100,000 wallets protected. And we've been able to save our users over $40 million from scammers. That's $40 million that scammers didn't get because WalletGuard exists. So yeah, big shout out to our users. Thank you for all the support.
Wow.
Dude, thank you to you for building what you've built with the team. Like I don't, when I'm on desktop, I don't sign a single transaction without running it through WalletGuard. Like
it's that easy.
It really is that easy. And you know, it's devastating when you see people on Twitter be like, oh, I clicked on the wrong link because maybe they clicked on like OpenSea.com when the URL is OpenSea.io. And it's like, oh, like heart goes out to you. But it's like, if you're not going to have good security practices in the sense of like, oh, I just Googled it and I clicked on like the first link that I saw pop up on Google. Right. It's like, protect yourself.
Look, it's at the point where there are scams everywhere. And this is not just Web3 scams, there's a Web2 scams as well. There's scams everywhere. But you know, we got to the point where, does it make sense for us to report every single time that a Twitter gets SIM swapped or a Discord gets compromised? This happens on a daily basis because of the negligence of employing security protocol when you're running a project or you're running a business, especially if it's in Web3 where drainer links are your target audience, right? So I think it got to the point where we were like, hey, all of these scenarios, a Discord compromise, an X page getting SIM swapped, a fake claim or an airdrop or whatever, like all these scenarios, you just need WalletGuard. WalletGuard would have stopped it every single time. Is there a reason for us to consistently report on it when any time that we go to test it out, WalletGuard is blocking it? I mean, it gets redundant. It's kind of like beating a dead horse. So, you know, we're at that point where, of course, we're going to let users know if something is out there, but we're really reporting on things that, you know, are detrimental. For example, 0 days for your Chrome browser. You know, those are things that we love reporting on as soon as they happen. And that's a Web2 threat that could affect your Web3 assets. That's what makes sense to report on. Because when it comes down to your Web3 assets, we're doing the heavy lifting for the user in the background. They don't even have to enter a website, connect their wallet, and run a simulation. If they're using WalletGuard, it'll tell them there's a wallet drainer. Like,
explain what that means.
Zero touch. That's security alpha. That's all you need.
Explain what that Chrome thing means. What did you say? 0 day on Chrome?
0 day. Yes. What does that mean? 0 day threat. So a 0 day threat is something that is not patched yet. It's very new. And it could be a potential exploit that maybe gives a attacker or someone using that, you know, 0 day in a malicious manner access to your device or access to your data or using a password stealer, keylogger. There's so many different ways that a 0 day could be classified. But the essential way that it is that it's not patched yet. It's very new and it's something that needs to be addressed quickly or has been addressed and you should update quickly. So, for example, anytime that the Chromium engine or Google Chrome or any of these browsers have a 0 day, we're reporting on it and letting users know to update your Chrome browser immediately, right? Because you could just be browsing the internet natively. You could be clicking on links and stuff. One of those links or one of those websites at that moment in time could have been compromised and could have been using that 0 day. Now, the chances of that happening are very, very slim, right? Like, what are the chances that you're going to land on that site? Your Chrome isn't already up to date past that point, and they're using that active exploit. And they're targeting you. Like, these are very minuscule chances, but the chances are that they can still happen. Just like the chances are that you can still get SIM swapped, no matter who you are. Your information is out there. It's leaked on the dark web. You can actually check your information and what's leaked on the dark web. If you go to pentester.com, it's P-E-N-T-E-S-T-E-R. You don't have to download anything. You don't have to install anything. You don't have to create an account. It's completely free. And all you do is you go to pentester.com. You type in your email address and it does a dark web scan of any data leaks that you might have been involved in. So you're probably going to see passwords that you hopefully still aren't using.
Oh my God.
You're probably going to see your social security number, hopefully not, your address, your phone number. Do you know what attackers can do with that information? They could SIM swap you with just your phone number, right? So your data can leave a trail and you should make sure to mitigate that trail, because if you check Pentester and you see a password that was leaked on the dark web, which means anyone can see it, and you're still using that password, mitigate it, AKA change it immediately. And if you see that your phone number has been leaked, then you should, regardless of if it's leaked or not, should not have it associated with your Gmail account, with your Twitter profile. Why? Because if someone has your phone number and they SIM swap you, or they manage to socially engineer the phone provider into thinking that they are you, well, they now have access to all your shit because your phone number is a recovery method for your account. Why not eliminate that risk, that variable that you have no control over because it's from someone sitting in a call center that you have no access to? Why not eliminate that risk and just remove your phone number, guys? Take the 2 seconds right now. Go to Twitter settings, account information, and remove your phone number. Or don't. You could just sit there like a sitting duck. It's not my loss, right? I hate seeing it happen to people, but it's, again, this is something that I say every Twitter space, it takes 2 seconds to do it and still people don't do it. They still get SIM swap. And then they say, well, I'm going to do it now.
Guys, if it could happen to the SEC, it could happen to you.
100%. And sometimes you're not even being a specific target. Let's say your information is leaked out there. You know, it could be hand selected or thrown into a group of people that they're sending a mass email out to or a mass message to. And, you know, it's just casting a wide net and seeing who's going to bite, seeing who's going to get fished or compromised from believing whatever the message is, which is why it's also very important. And this is also a Web 2 tip, is to, no matter how you're getting a message, if you're not inciting the action, it is most likely a scam. And what I mean by that is, you could get a text message, a phone call, an email, a DM, whatever the case is, any method of communication from Amazon, FedEx, Apple, Microsoft, the IRS. These are all things that even our parents have spoken to us about, right? Maybe they have been compromised or have been scammed because of these things. Mm-hmm. And the main point is that if we give out this simple tip, which is if you're not inciting the action, it is most likely a scam. Go to the source instead. Mm-hmm. That could save tons of time, stress, money, right? And these are Web 2 threats as well. Because think about it. You get that Amazon email about your shipment, and you might have ordered something from Amazon. Don't entertain the links in the email telling you click here to lock your account. Yeah. Go directly to Amazon. You know Amazon's website. Go to the source and verify if the message you just got is true. You got a fraudulent text message about a bank charge from your credit card company, and telling you to, you know, click here, click this link to confirm if it's you or not. Go directly to the credit card company's website, log in and confirm it there. Don't entertain the links that you're getting in the text or the email or the DM. Because most likely, if you do go to the source, whatever message you got is fake. It's not real. That's what starts off that cascading effect of being scammed and compromised and letting people into your devices and believing whoever it is on the other end of that line and anything that they say. And this is something that is pretty scary because our parents told us our whole lives, don't talk to strangers, let alone they're believing random scammers over the phone that they've never met. And they're believing everything that they're being told by these people that are just there to steal our money. You know, these are simple tips that can help save not only our money, but our parents' money, grandparents' money, right? These, at the end of the day, these are all our funds. Mm-hmm. So we need to share that information.
Mm-hmm. Explain what the SIM swap is. Like, I know that if I remove my phone number, then that eliminates the ability for the fraudsters to pretend that it's me. But how exactly does that work? Like, how does that work in the background?
Yeah. So let me give you like a scenario of how someone can get their account compromised. So your email is tied to a lot of accounts out there, and it also might, on some of those accounts, have your name, right? Maybe your last name even, right? We're starting off with just an email address. Just picture this, just an email address. Could have been leaked in a data set. It could have been involved in a spam phishing chain, whatever the case is. With just your email, I can go to that website that I just told you, pentester.com. I can do a scan on your email address. I can get your phone number from a data leak because it's most likely out there. A lot of websites have been compromised that we save our phone numbers to. Now with your phone number, I have your phone number and your email at this point, right? So I can find out the carrier of your phone number. Let's say it's T-Mobile. And I can call your carrier and I can convince them that I am you, because I have your info, right? I have your email address, and I could socially engineer that person into thinking that I'm in a state of turmoil and I need access to the account. We need to get the account moved over or whatever. I need my password. And then you get the password, then you call again. And then from that point, you're in your account. Now you convince the person you need to port your phone number over to another account. Now you have access to the number, right? Now with that phone number, let's pretend your email account has a recovery method set up as your phone number. Now I can use it to literally send a text to myself because I am you now. I have your phone number. And I can get into your email account. Now I got access to all your other shit because you probably used that email for everything, like your Twitter page, right? So It's a cascading effect. One piece of data leaked about you can lead to a point where all your accounts are being compromised, which is why things like password managers for strong, unique, randomly generated passwords are essential, because it's not practical to remember passwords for hundreds of accounts, and it's also not practical to use the same password for everything. So naturally, you need a password manager that's generating strong, unique, random passwords for you. That's your first line of defense, is a strong password. Your second line of defense is multi-factor authentication. So whether it's software-based or hardware-based, like Google Authenticator or a YubiKey, okay? And the important part is I'm saying software or hardware-based, and I'm not mentioning phone or text-based. You do not want your phone number associated with a two-factor method or recovery method because of the scenario that I just explained, right? So eliminate that as an attack vector by not being lazy and choosing the text message option, but actually setting up a Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator, Authy. These are all free, right? You don't have to pay anything for these. And they're adding a second layer of security on top of your strong, unique, randomly generated password. You do those two things, your OPSEC is 99% ahead of everyone in the space, right? These are things that you can do right now that cost you absolutely no money, and you don't have to sit there sweating every day wondering, holy shit, is someone about to tap into my accounts, right? And again, just keep in mind, nothing is 100% secure. So even if you do these things, you still have to stay vigilant, you still have to keep your eyes open. You can't be loose with your credentials. But we're trying to get people as close to 100% as possible by employing these, what we call standards, these defaults. Because once you are using a password manager and you have strong passwords, once you are using a two-factor authenticator and you understand what it actually does, then every account moving forward that you create will follow these defaults of strong credentials and two-factor authentication. This is how we can, with education, change the way that we're handling our data and being able to secure our accounts, because this is stuff that is not talked about in school, just like things that actually matter, like credential management and encryption and investments, mutual funds, stocks, taxes, debt management, you know, the things that we weren't told about that, unfortunately, we figured out ourselves, thankfully figured out ourselves, and now have to get this information out there because of great podcasts and engagements. There you go.
That's right.
Let's go.
I love that.
Mic drop, Michael.
Damn. Mic drop. I love that. Jen, you posted something about it this year, like January, you were going to be focusing a lot on OPSEC. What, if anything else, have you done to secure your bags?
Yeah. So I already use a password manager, like Michael said. But I think one of the things that I've been a little negligent about is like double checking all of my accounts. Like I would say 95% of like the primary accounts that I'm logging into every day, my bank accounts, like all my key information has been moved over. But like I occasionally get like a text that's like clearly from Google that's like someone trying to like log into my account. But it's like in Chinese, it's weird. But I go to all of my Gmail accounts and I'm like, my phone number is not linked to any of these accounts. And so there is just like, there are some things that I get myself that I'm like, I don't know where that's coming from. I don't know where the hole or the gap is in that, because like I've already removed my phone number as an authentication method from my Discord, from Twitter, from like anything that I'm interacting with every day. So there's like, I just like, I'm trying to spend more time this month going through every single old email account that might be like years old that I might have not even logged into in the past couple of years, but maybe it's tied to like one key account that I can't fucking figure out. So there's that.
Can I say something on that, Jen? I do this once a year. It's a once a year audit, and I go through every single account and I remove any information that doesn't need to be there. And I also request a purge or delete the account so that this way I don't have data scatter. Think about all of the hundreds of accounts you've created since you've made your first email address. That information can be out there, and it could also be in such a manner where you might have inadvertently accepted something. Like, let's say you installed Google Drive at some point in your life, or you installed, you know, let's say Dropbox, and you hit backup my files and you didn't know it made a copy of all the files on your computer and threw it into a container that you forgot about, which then could later on be compromised. And this is how people leak their own information. But, you know, these are things where data scatter, you can reduce it. You can think back to all the accounts you've created, log into everything, delete what you don't need, because your information all over the place, those are all attack vectors, right? So to be able to think that you don't have a saved credit card on any website, you don't have a saved address on any website, you have everything unchecked when it comes down to like all the newsletters and garbage that you don't want to see and deal with, then you're going to feel a lot better using those accounts, because you know that even if they got compromised, none of your information was on that site anyway. Right. So just wanted to say that once a year audits are very important, to do a self audit on your own accounts and purge anything that you're not actively using, and understand maybe some changes they might have made to their platform that you could also disable in order to not be data mined.
I might hit you up for your list, because like I've like scratched my head like front and back, like looking at my password manager and being like, what accounts am I freaking missing? So they're like, that's just on my personal OPSEC. And then I also wanted to change like basically where I do cold storage for like my NFTs and whatnot. Like my ledger has been broken for a minute, but I'm like, it's fine. I don't really like, it's fine. Like basically got a new one, but then I'm migrating over because I know there's some clashes with people and ledger and, you know, how they've gone about their own security key management. But, you know, I'm one of those weird people where I generally just create new wallets for things. Like if I'm planning on farming on a new platform, like I'll just make a new wallet and transfer money over. So that way it's like, this is a solo hot wallet for maybe these two platforms. This is another solo hot wallet for these two platforms. So that way all my assets aren't just in one spot. So I want to like get back into incorporating cold storage into that.
I really like that. So I have a question about that, but I want to also open it up to, if anybody has any questions, just raise your hand and hop on here so we can have those. I'm sure that on these type of subjects, we all have like really personal scenarios that we when we start asking those questions, we realize that we all can relate to. So I would encourage you, if you have any questions and you're listening to Space Now, hop on up here and ask the question so we can ask. Okay, the question for you, Jen. So when you are connecting to these different sites for like an airdrop, right? And you create a new wallet, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of them, maybe not. I think I actually just answered my own question. So a lot of these airdrops are based on the activity that you've already had, right?
Yeah. So it depends, right? Like there are some airdrops that's like, this is going to be like, see if your wallet qualifies, like based off of activity. Manta did or I think it was Dimension that did a really good job of like, you didn't even need to connect your wallet. You could just paste your address and see. And I think like that should become adopted as an industry standard. But like right now, there are a few lending platforms on Solana that I'm airdrop farming. Created a new Solana wallet for those. Like where, and when I'm saying I'm airdrop farming for it, it's I'm providing liquidity on the platform and like earning points. And so it's not like this is based off of your previous activity, but this is more based on your current activity on the platform. So that's kind of how I look at it. Like if there's a free mint happening, I usually create a new wallet because I'm like, I don't know if this is a good free mint. Like, I don't know. Like, here, I'm just going to make a dummy wallet and it cool. If it mints, I'll transfer it to one of the wallets that I'm a little bit more active on. But like, that's what I mean when I'm like, I'm creating new wallets pretty much for everything.
Okay. And we had a long time ago, NFT God infamously now at this point, clicked on the wrong link and got drained. And at that time, on If You Know, You Know, we had this really long space addressing security, wallet security on that. WalletGuard also joined us, Michael. And one of the main questions, I'm going to ask it here again, because this is a common question that I hear all the time is, okay, if I'm creating different wallets and I end up with 30 different wallets in my MetaMask, right? And one of them gets compromised, what happens to all of the other 29?
Yeah. So this is the importance of understanding the difference between a seed phrase and a private key, which a lot of people just don't get. So picture a seed phrase is like a bank, and private keys are all the vaults inside of the bank, right? So all of those vaults are your wallets, because when you created your first wallet, it gave you a seed phrase, and any wallets created underneath that seed phrase are those private keys, right? So these are, this is the concept of having segregated, truly segregated wallets by having separate seed phrases and separate keys associated with those seed phrases. Because a lot of times people actually end up compromising their seed phrase, or there is a seed phrase data leak, or they willingly type it into a fake wallet provider or a fake project that's tricking them into typing it in. So then they end up compromising all the wallets underneath it. No matter how many wallets you had, you could have created 30. All those assets would be compromised because you gave out your seed, right? So the difference here is that if it is a specific wallet, a specific key that is compromised, meaning on that specific wallet, you had your wallet drained, it wasn't anything related to your seed phrase, then it does not affect your other wallets because those other wallets are tied to different private keys, right? So these are segregated in that manner. And the problem is that I've seen happen multiple times, is that people compromise their seed phrase and they're told to go create a new wallet, and they actually end up creating a new wallet under the same seed phrase and immediately compromise themselves again because they still don't understand the difference between having a separate seed phrase for these keys, right? So it's very simple to employ wallet segregation, just like it's important to also employ browser segregation, right? And when I say browser segregation, I'm not talking about having Firefox and Google Chrome and Brave and Opera. I'm talking about whatever browser you prefer to use. There is a feature called browser profiles, which lets you have multiple instances of your different browsing habits or your different wallets with different keys associated, right? So I don't use the same browsing profile that I do all my crypto degenning stuff on that I use for my social networks, because completely different data sets, completely different links that I'm clicking on, and I don't want to interlock them, right? Not keeping all your eggs in one basket is a massive win for the user, just like not keeping all of your precious NFTs in the same basket that you do your degenning and airdropping on, right? Because if you do compromise it, you're losing everything in one go. It takes 2 seconds to simply create another software or hardware wallet, another key, and move and segregate assets that you don't plan on selling into it. Easy win. These are easy wins. We're not telling people to go out buy new things. We're just telling them to understand what they are doing when it comes to segregating the assets and the differences between a seed phrase and a private key and how you can actually compromise yourself.
How many wallets do you have?
Me personally? So I have, let's just say, like here's the thing. Like I definitely employ a hardware wallet, right? I don't want to give out my whole OPSEC, right? This is being in the security space, right? But I employ a hardware wallet. I employ wallet segregation as well as browser profile segregation. I also have two separate devices, one of them where I am doing my degen stuff on, and the other one where I manage assets that I'm not necessarily selling on a daily basis, but I do things like claim staking coins and stuff like that. So, it's just a matter of having simple segregation. I'm not telling people to go out and make 30 wallets. I would drive myself insane if I had 30 wallets. I would lose track of it, right? Because not only are there different wallets, there's different chains. And then when you get to the point of claiming airdrops, you're sending a little bit from here to there, claiming a ton. It's sitting there. You're forgetting about it. Now you have 30 different wallets with some funds on one chain and one on the other. You're going to lose you're going to freaking drive yourself insane. You just have to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Have wallet segregation to the point where maybe you have 3 different wallets in play. One of the wallets is your cold storage, which is things you don't plan on selling or touching that are important to you and valuable that don't actually end up interacting with anything. They only get sent to this wallet, right? And when you do need to interact with it, you can mess with that at that point. So cold storage. Then you have something that you would consider like, just like a hot wallet, right? Like something that you're connecting on a daily basis. It's a hot wallet. It doesn't have all your important assets inside of it. And then of course there's like a warm wallet and there's segregated parts of this. But generally what I do is a cold storage. And then I have, what I'm using on a daily basis. And then something that I'm using to degen on, where I'm sending a small amount of Ethereum to in order to get something done, or I'm trying to do a swap with a contract that is unknown, and I'm trying to do an NFT mint on something that no one knows about. Like generally, I don't really do those things because I have WalletGuard and it tells me everything that's going to happen before it happens anyway, so I don't have to worry about that. But shameless plug.
I love that. Okay, we do have a question.
Hey guys, this is Paula with the NFT Girl Brand. Belle, thank you so much for putting this together. This is perfect timing at the beginning of the year. I had a question for you guys. You were talking about password managers. You know, there's so many out there. I think LastPass recently, or last year had a breach. Which ones do you guys recommend?
Very good question. Michael, what do you think?
I didn't hear anything.
You didn't hear that?
No, I can't hear you.
Of course.
which password managers do you like?
Oh, which password managers? Mm-hmm. Definitely a great question. So there's a massive difference between these password managers. If you've ever used LastPass, stop using it immediately. LastPass has been compromised multiple times. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, people saved their private keys and seed phrases in their password vaults, their secure password vaults on LastPass, which again, were compromised. This is a third party that you're putting trust into in managing your credentials, right? So key rule when it comes down to private key and seed phrase management is to never keep it in a digital format. And by digital format, I mean, don't text it to yourself. Don't take a screenshot of it. Don't put it in a password vault that's in a password manager. These are all digital. Remember, don't keep it in a digital format. So even a password protected Excel file, trust me, that's digital too, right? Password protected Excel document, that sounds like it's digital. So keep those offline. But password managers, if you are using LastPass, stop using it immediately. You should also not be saving private keys and seed phrases into password managers, just like you shouldn't be saving your two-factor backup codes for your two-factor methods into password managers. These are all things that should be kept offline. But the best password manager, in my opinion, is going to be Bitwarden. Bitwarden is free, and it also allows you to self-host your credentials. Picture this. The only attack variable is yourself, right? Now you are truly responsible for your own password vault, and you also don't have to pay for Bitwarden, unlike LastPass. So it's essentially my go-to password manager. If you were to ask me for something that's a little more user-friendly, I would recommend Dashlane. Dashlane is great. I've set it up for my parents to manage their usernames and passwords so they don't have to constantly reset them on a daily basis and use the same password for everything. You know, this makes people's lives easier. Okay. Password managers are meant to make people's lives easier. So Bitwarden, completely free, and you could self-host it. And then Dashlane for those that need a little more user-friendly option. But definitely do not use LastPass, and definitely never save backup codes, seed phrases, or private keys in any digital formats. And you'll be very secure when it comes to your credential management.
Why haven't I heard of either one of those?
I don't know. That's scary. Dashlane. By the way, everything that I'm speaking about and all the official links, as well as all of my recommendations today, are on walletguard.app, our official website. It's actually in my bio. I'm a speaker in the audience right now. But walletguard.app has everything I spoke about, including articles on how to secure your devices, on how to set up your password manager, on what antivirus to use. You know, these are all things that are essential to set up the right way so that you don't have to constantly think and worry about them. Trust me, you'll feel a lot better knowing that everything's locked down, it's properly segregated, and that you have the right security in place so these things do not happen that we see on a daily basis happening to people that just don't care about security to begin with.
Michael, have you looked at 1Password? That's also encrypted. I don't know if you.
Yeah, 1Password is, yeah, I personally have not used it, but I haven't heard anything to the form of what happened with LastPass with it.
Yeah.
Again, I do prefer to self-host credentials and also have my own backups. something that, again, a lot of people put a lot of trust into third parties to manage for them. You know, they're having, you know, everything backed up to their iCloud or their Google Drive or their Dropbox. And then just think, if someone were to get into that account, how much access they would have to your stuff, right? Like totally. A lot of people people take photos, right? You're taking photos on your smartphone and you have auto backup enabled. All of your photos, all of your videos are being backed up somewhere, right? What if that account were to get compromised? What if you're sitting right now listening to the Twitter space and you see a notification pop up at the top of your phone that says your Gmail password has been reset, and it is actually your Gmail password, or that there is suspicious activity on your account? What is the first thing you're doing? You don't even know because your emotions are running wild. Yeah. That is a scary situation. And these are things that we actually talk about in the Wallet Guard Academy. We even have an article on what to do in case your wallet gets drained, what to report to, how to file that report, how to figure out how it happened, whether it was a seed phrase leak or something malicious, or, you know, all this information we try to keep and streamline in one place for free so that people know the right resource to refer to, whether it's onboarding somebody or, God forbid, getting your wallet drained.
I got to go and watch all of that. I feel like, you know, I think that the prudent ones of us in the community try to educate ourselves as much as possible, but it's like, it's so hard to stay on top of everything, and things happen so quickly. And those type of incidents that you're talking about, Michael, when like shit hits the fan and you get an email or something weird happens, it always happens at the most inopportune time, you know, mm-hmm. at 2 a.m. I was actually hosting a space one time. And, you know, perhaps some of the listeners will remember, maybe not, I don't know, but we were hosting a space and I was doing it with Farouk, and it was going to be a big space because, you know, exciting. I had talked about it, advertised it, et cetera. And I hop on to start hosting it. And suddenly my account on X switches to my alt account. I was talking literally in the middle of, you know, welcoming everybody to the show. And it just flipped to the other one, logged me out completely out of Bell NFTs. And I was hosting it for my alt account. And I was like, what the hell just happened? Where did everybody go? Why did this just happen? And when I tell you that I was like shitting bricks, it was terrible. I was sweating and my hands were shaking. And I was like, I didn't know how to even proceed, you know? And it was immediately thinking, all right, am I getting SIM swapped? Did someone hack into it? How do I stop this? I was connected with like 100 people that were listening in. You know, did it impact them? I mean, just at the most inopportune times. Thankfully, it was nothing. To this day, I have no idea what happened. But I was able to log. Yeah, I know, which is worrying, right? But like,
that scares me.
I know. Never,
and just continue on like nothing's wrong.
I mean, it just like within an hour or so, I was able to get back in, and it was just my passwords weren't working. And then my passwords were working. I have no idea, but my phone number is not connected.
Yeah, I trust you reset your password.
I did, of course. Reset all of it. Like all of it has been reset. And I reset it like 3 times just because I wanted to make sure. I reset it. I changed that one. I reset it. I changed that one.
Like, there are scenarios where people actually have their devices compromised, and every time they change their password, the attacker already knows.
Oh my gosh.
People sometimes don't know that they're compromised because they don't have any concept of using like an antivirus, right? To check if there's active processes running in the background that could be rats, remote access Trojans, you know, they just don't care. And then they wonder when they do get hit, what the hell happened?
What happened?
You let it happen.
Oh, scary man. Stuff. I was so scared that day, and I was able to get in, and I was like, I'm not hosting anything today. I can't even think right now, you know?
Your mind's all over.
Yeah, the place. No. Exactly. You can't think of anything. Like, I couldn't even remember what my username was at that point, you know? Much less if I had a phone number connected.
And that's why scammers are so successful, because they get you to the point where you're not thinking clearly, mm-hmm. and you literally do not know what to do. So you're believing whatever the hell it is that you're being told, right? I always tell people it's important to ask questions. If you're dealing with somebody in the DMs that's telling you something and you're unsure of it, DM me and ask me, right? Ask it in a public forum.
Yeah.
So you get multiple people vetting the response and the answer. Don't handle it in a private area where no one can help you if someone is trying to scam you or get you to do something you shouldn't be doing to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. All really good advice. All right, guys, this show has been the bomb. I always learn so much from having security focused type of spaces. Because like I said, you can hear it again and again. Not all of it is going to register the first or even the second or even the third time. And implementing the entire, you know, the big long checklist of everything that you have to do takes time. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a second to, you know, your closing thoughts, if you will, and how we can support both of you. So Jen, let's start with you.
Yeah. Well, download Wallet Guard, the Chrome extension, if you haven't, first and foremost. Like, Michael, like I met Michael when I was really first starting my DeFi journey like years ago. And it's just been like Wallet Guard has just been a part of my everyday transacting life since then.
So I didn't know that when I invited both of you on. That's so funny.
Yeah. We're homies. We go way back.
There you go.
Yeah. But if you guys follow me on X, you can see my handle here on the live stream, or click on, you know, the little elemental with the gold beans in the Twitter spaces, and you'll see pinned, I have this NFT Finance 101 series that I'm working on. And then if you want to see more videos, you can go to Remint Realities YouTube, or you can hit my highlights. You know, putting out quality content is a huge focus of mine, and it's something that I'm hoping to really ramp up and get to the point where I'm able to output multiple videos at the same level of quality this year. So keep an eye out.
Let's go. Thank you. Thank you, Jen, for the kind words. And it's also been a pleasure knowing you in the space. I cannot wait to see where we're going to be in 5 years from now, given how much we've scaled and grown. So yeah, definitely a big shout out to you. And thank you for always supporting. Belle, also to you for hosting the space, letting us talk here, and, you know, really putting this together. Some closing thoughts. I would say do your own research on Wallet Guard and see why we are the most advanced open source security layer for your preferred wallet. And I'm telling you that on the basis of type Wallet Guard into Twitter, see what people are saying. Check out our website, see who we're backed by, who we're partnered with, like MetaMask and Chainalysis. Check out our GitHub and the fact that we're open source. You could see clearly exactly the code that you're installing when you choose to use Wallet Guard, because transparency is extremely important. Building trust in Web3 is extremely hard, and building trust as a security company in Web3 is one of the hardest things. And that's why, again, just wanted to give a shout out to our users, our over 70,000 users that we're helping protect. Also, make sure that you catch us on Killer Whales, the TV show that's going to be airing next month. Wallet Guard is on that show. You're going to see me giving the pitch. So definitely tune into that. And we also do weekly security spaces every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern. We got one coming up in a couple of hours. You can best bet I'm going to be talking about the SEC situation, and I'm probably going to be bringing up Gary Gensler's name a few times. So that's going to be fun. But yes, my PFP is the Bored Ape. It is in the audience, MichaelK.eth. MichaelKDCL is the handle. Definitely check me out. You will never catch me trying to show you an NFT or a token, but you will definitely catch me dropping security alpha. So with that being said, don't raw dog the blockchain. Use Wallet Guard.
Don't raw dog the blockchain.
Well, I should have let you close out the show with that sentence.
wait. Let me close it out with this as well. This space is recorded, correct?
Yes.
So people that couldn't make it here, for the people that are here, make sure you hit that box at the bottom right of the screen. Drop the like, drop the repost. Even if you are embarrassed to repost it, just repost it for an hour and unrepost it later. Let's get the repost numbers up a little bit and make sure that people that weren't here could enjoy this content, this delicious, beautiful content later on, so they could also help secure themselves.
Because it is one of the most important things that you can do. You can fuck around on the blockchain, you can have fun, you can make money, but if you slip up even one little thing, you lose it all and game over. So yeah, for sure, don't raw dog the blockchain.
What a line.
For real. Let's go.
You see it, they heard me say that once on the show. They're like, say it again.
Yeah.
So it's going to be crazy.
That's it for today's show, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. If you know, you know, is done. We do this show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Next week, we have Luca Nets with Pudgy Penguin. So let's go. That's going to be a really, really good show. If you didn't know, now you know, baby. I'll see y'all on the flip side. Have an amazing rest of your day. Make sure that you retweet the show. And make sure that you tune in for the next Twitter space with Michael. So see you, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.